called The Black Man Is God.
It's
called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. I cannot remember the last time I sat down to tape a podcast and there was this much going on in the world of sports and hip-hop music. We got a lot to cover tonight, y'all, so let's get right to it. This is Jay Hicks with the preseason podcast of the year, Hip Hop Sports Report. Check us out at hiphopsportsreport.com. Thank you guys for listening on Tuesday, June 20th of 2017. I want to send a special shout out to Hip Hop Sports Report contributor Kenneth Hicks. And of course, as always, I always shout out my man Anthony Houston as well, frequent contributor to the podcast and to the website. We got a lot of great stuff on there, man. So much to talk about in the world of sports and so much to talk about in the world of hip hop. As I mentioned, Jay-Z's dropping an album. You know, we have our Tale of the Tape on Kendrick's album out on the website. We have the Tupac movie coming out. We have a feature article on the Tupac Shakur All Eyes on Me biopic, which has been picked apart by everybody. So it seems, I actually haven't seen it yet, but go ahead and check out those articles there so we're not neglecting the hip-hop scene, and we definitely have a lot to cover there, and we will do that in podcast form on a date in the very, very near future. But I did want to speak first, before we get into the sports thing, because this is the Mark Draft edition of the podcast, and we're going to have Mark Hicks on in a little bit. I did want to take a few minutes to discuss the NBA Finals, and even before that, the situation that happened actually this afternoon, the news just came down that Prodigy from Mobb Deep passed away at 42 years of age due to complications from the sickle cell disease that he's had for many, many years. Really just a sad day for hip hop, man. I said on Facebook, you know, it always seems like the best MCs always die young. And Prodigy was absolutely one of the best MCs. He was really a legend in the game from Queens. And he's made an imprint from when he first came on the scene with Shook Ones, and him and Havoc together formed a duo that was to be reckoned with, especially out of New York City. You know, obviously we had some bigger rap groups of the time, like the Wu-Tang Clan and stuff like that. And, you know, in other parts of the country, there were other rap groups like Bone Thugs that was popping at the same time. West Side Connection was doing their thing back in the mid-90s. But part of Mobb Deep's legacy is going to be doing everything they could do to hold down the East Coast and not being afraid to kind of puff their chest out a little bit, especially when Snoop came through with the Dog Pound and stomped on the buildings and stuff like that. Prodigy and Mobb Deep really stuck their chest out for the East Coast. When Biggie was kind of trying to, you know, recuse himself a little bit, or so it seemed from the whole thing, you know, he wasn't constantly going at Tupac in the way that Pac was constantly going at Big on Wax. But Prodigy was not afraid to do that. And, you know, he went at it with Jay-Z, as we all know. And, you know, we all know the story behind that. But Prodigy made some beautiful music, you know, from the Infamous and Hell on Earth. And, you know, even when he did a solo thing, and he had Keep It Thorough and Stuck to You years later. And, you know, all these records, everything he did with The Alchemist was fire. It's just a really, really sad day for hip hop, man. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention that first off. So we're going to dedicate this podcast to the memory of Albert Johnson, a.k.a. Prodigy from Mobb Deep, man. We're going to miss you. And we love you. We love your music, man. Hip hop will always love Prodigy. Getting to the hoop side of things, though. And again, I wanted to touch on this myself before Mark Hicks came on to the podcast. All right, y'all. I was wrong. Okay. I was wrong. You happy now? You happy? Yeah. Your boy got that one wrong. You know, we did the whole podcast with Jabari Davis. I said the Cavs were going to win in six. I was pretty confident about it. I even said they could maybe even win in five if things broke right. And needless to say, that did not happen. So first, I want to say congratulations to the Golden State Warriors. They were the better team. The better team did, in fact, win the NBA Finals. I don't know if I see it quite the same way that everybody else sees it. But I do believe that the better team did win. The Cavs just did not have an answer for Kevin Durant on the defensive end. The Cavs couldn't get a stop when they needed to get a stop. And these are things that we talked about on the podcast. You know, we talked on the podcast with Jabari Davis. I said, you know, if the Cavs don't outshoot the Warriors, they're not going to win this series. And they definitely did not do that the first two games of the series, that's for sure. I said, if the Cavs don't have an answer for Durant, you know, Durant averaged 30 a game in the 2012 finals. It's not like he didn't show up. And he averaged 35 a game in this series. I said, Durant and Curry had not been playing this well together at the same time at any point during the season, and that they were peaking at the right time. And they continued that stellar play throughout the finals. So I have to give them credit there. And we said that Golden State was a great defensive team, or at least a very good defensive team, whereas the Cavaliers were not. And when it come to, when it came time for the Cavs to get a stop, they couldn't get one. And so, obviously, that's going to stop you from winning a championship if you can't get a stop. We saw that in Game 5. The Cavs were making their comeback, and they were right there. I mean, that game was closer than people remember, and I'm going to actually double back and come back to that. But needless to say, the Warriors were the better team. But having said that, I stand by my pick. I stand by my pick before the series that the Cavaliers would win it. The evidence suggested that they were going to win a game on the road in this series because LeBron and the Cavs had won road games. LeBron himself had won a road game in the playoffs, I think 29 consecutive series, including, you know, two series against Golden State, obviously, in the last two finals before. I thought that they were capable of doing that again. I believe that Kyrie was capable of outplaying Steph Curry, and Kyrie averaged 30 points a game in the finals. He averaged more points than Curry did. Not to say that that's the end-all be-all of outplaying somebody, but Kyrie averaged 30 a game in the finals. I don't know how many other guys can say that they've ever done that. So, I think that the Cavs had a great shot to do it. I did not expect them to kind of, I don't want to say not show up, but they just didn't bring it in the first two games. And Tristan didn't bring it. JR didn't bring it. The bench absolutely did not bring it. What's funny about the bench, y'all, is, you know, I along with a lot of other people, kind of assumed that Cleveland's bench guys, specifically their veterans on the bench, would have an impact on the series, a positive one for Cleveland. And I think I learned that young guys on the final stage that aren't star players, we're talking about role players and bench players, I think young guys tend to play better than old guys, because old guys that have never been there, if you're an old guy and you've been there, that's one thing. If you're an old guy and you've never been there, you spent your entire career putting the finals up on this pedestal as this unattainable feat, and finally you get to the show, right? You're on the big stage and you can't handle it. So Deron Williams, terrible. Kyle Korver, terrible. Iman Shumpert was not good either, but he's been to a couple of finals, so he should have known better. And same with JR. JR and Tristan, they joined the party late. If they came on time, maybe it's a different outcome. But yeah, I stand by the prediction that the Cavs were going to win the series. I was really confident that they were going to do it, and obviously they did not get it done. They had no answer for Durant, man. They just didn't. And that was another thing that we mentioned on the podcast. LeBron's going to be exhausted on one end, running the offense and scoring 35, 40 points. How is he then going to have the ability to shut down Durant defensively? Because he was the only guy that was capable of doing it. I would have liked to have seen Ty Lue throw Derek Williams out there a little bit more instead of Richard Jefferson. I think he has a little more athleticism and a little more youth that would have helped him keep up with Durant a little bit. And I also think Ty Lue should have played Channing Frye some, because after all, Channing Frye was on the bench pretty much the entire series except for a small portion of game two. And the thinking is that he can't play against the Warriors. Well, if Steve Kerr's out here stealing minutes with JaVale McGee, who was very good in the finals, and David West and Zaza Pachulia. Zaza was terrible in the finals. If he's out here giving those guys minutes, why can't Ty Lue get Fry minutes if those guys are out there? It didn't make sense to me. So I don't think Ty Lue had a very good series, and I don't think Ty Lue necessarily is a very good coach. But getting back to Durant, though, there was no answer for him. And it's funny because the view with the trilogy of this final series was that this is the rubber match, quote unquote. This is the rubber match of the series, or of the three finals. It wasn't really the rubber match, though. I mean, like, a rubber match kind of implies that you're going to get the same two teams again. But Golden State was so much different because of Durant that it's hard to kind of align this performance with the other two. So I'm not saying that Golden State doesn't get credit. That's not what I'm trying to get at. But what I'm just saying is when you say which team is better, well, I mean, the closest thing we got to both teams at full strength was the 2016 finals, and the Cavs won. Now, Golden State had a different team this year because of Durant, and he made such an impact. He made even more of an impact than I even thought he was going to make it. And I always thought he was a phenomenal player since I saw him play in the McDonald's game back in 2006. But Durant was so much of a story and so much of a contributor to Golden State's success. It really didn't make it feel like a rubber match. Like, this championship for Golden State did not validate the first two, or did not validate that they were the better team. than the Cavs the last couple of seasons before. If you want to say they're the better organization, I guess, because they went out and got Durant, sure, I'll give them that. But I didn't quite agree with the notion that, like, this kind of cemented the fact that they were the best team all along and they were leaps and bounds ahead. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to play a clip real quick. This is from, I believe, a guy named Damon Bruce, who is, I think he's the Warriors pregame show host. He was on the Colin Cowherd show, The Herd. So this is courtesy of Fox Sports and Fox Sports Radio. But check out what he said about the Warriors after this last championship.
Shot in game 7 last year aside, the Golden State Warriors are the best team in the world. They have won 254 basketball games, regular season and playoffs included, over the course of 3 years. Why people still criticize them, it's because they're in the watch me, I'm a critic business. This is true excellence. And if you can't salute it, acknowledge it, even if you don't like it, it's ridiculous. It's time for the Warriors to get the respect that so many do not want to give them. They're so much better than everyone else. They took on the best player in the world in LeBron James, added the second best player in the world, and had the best team and best ball movement and best defense to begin with. And this is the way it's going. If you're not trying to be like the Warriors, you're donezo.
I don't agree with that. Sorry. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you had to say who's been the best team in the NBA the last 3 years, I don't have any problem with anybody saying the Warriors have been the best team the last 3 years. I'm not really going to fight anybody on that, especially when you factor in the regular season performance. I'm not disputing that so much, but the idea that they're leaps and bounds ahead of every team in the league, they are leaps and bounds ahead of every team in the league that's not the Cavaliers, okay? Because the Cavs beat them, and as I said on the last podcast with Jabari back on June 1st, Steph was not hurt, and I proved it back on the podcast. Draymond's suspension did not matter that much, and I proved that on the podcast too, so go back and listen to that if you doubt me. But this notion that Golden State is light years ahead of everybody, no, because I'll tell you right now, if Kawhi Leonard went to R.C. Buford and Peter Holt and said, I want you to buy out my contract because I want to join the Cleveland Cavaliers next year, and they don't have to lose any assets to acquire me, I'm just going to walk over there and walk on the squad, then I think the Cavs will be in position to take the Warriors down next year. But that's essentially what happened with Durant. Kevin Durant is the Ted Cruz of NBA basketball. And I've said that all season. It's not that Ted Cruz, you know, I mean, say what you want about his politics or whatever, but he's risen to pretty much the top of his industry, much like Durant did, right? And Ted Cruz got trashed by Trump. Trump trashed him personally. He trashed his family. He trashed his wife, called her ugly or whatever else he did. He stands up at the RNC, Ted Cruz does, and tells people to vote your conscience and don't vote for Trump. And when Trump finally wins the Republican nomination and he's running against Hillary Clinton, what does Ted Cruz do? He turns around and he endorses Donald Trump. That's exactly what Kevin Durant did. Kevin Durant went toe-to-toe with the Warriors. He had them on the ropes. He had them beat. If he actually showed up in Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals last year, he doesn't even go to Golden State because they win in advance to the finals and he never even leaves Oklahoma City, I don't believe. But he got beat in part because he failed. And then he went and joined up with the team that beat him. It was a classic, you can't beat him, join him. That's such a Ted Cruz move. You know, it still doesn't all the way sit right with me personally as a fan. And somebody who enjoys competition doesn't sit right with me at all. But I think a lot of people kind of would understand that. I'm not even knocking the Warriors organization for going out and getting him. I got to shout out my man C.L. Palmer, who said last summer that it was already wrapped up, that the Golden State Warriors are going to win the title in 2017. He was right. I was wrong. But again, they won because Durant decided to just go there. And, you know, even when it didn't appear that they needed him. It doesn't appear that the Cavs need somebody of Kawhi Leonard's caliber, but you know what? He might be the second best player in the league. And if he just decides to join the Cavs tomorrow, I think the Cavs will be right there with him, man. I don't think that the Warriors are light years ahead of anybody, or at least not the Cleveland Cavaliers. Maybe they're ahead of everybody in the West. They're not ahead of the Cavs. I still believe that the Cavs would have won the 2015 finals if Love and Kyrie had been healthy. I think they would have won the 2015 finals had Kyrie just been healthy. And they won the 2016 finals. And this series was not as one-sided as people would lead you to believe. We saw the Cavs get blown out in the first two games. We saw the Cavs blow out the Warriors in the fourth game. When people say, well, the Warriors had to hit, or excuse me, the Cavs had to hit the NBA record for threes in the finals to just to beat the Warriors. They have to do that three more times. No, they don't. They won by 20 points that night. So they could have hit four or five less threes and they still would have won the game. They didn't need to set any records to beat them, but they just had to outplay them. But unfortunately for them, they only did it, well, maybe two times. But that brings me to my next point, is that game three was a crucial game. And LeBron folded down the stretch, unfortunately, for Cleveland fans. You know, I think my being tired, fatigue had something to do with it. But LeBron was just, he kind of collapsed in the final seconds or down the stretch. Now, I don't want people to take that and run with it and say that all of a sudden LeBron doesn't deliver in crunch time, because that is a lie. Don't listen to anybody that says that. But in this particular game, he did not deliver in the end of game three, and I think it really cost the team. And I described that in detail on Twitter, if you go back and look at the tweets there. I think the Cavaliers are in contention still, and that they don't need to revamp the entire team in order to compete with this Golden State team, even with Durant. I think there is a gap there, and I think the Warriors are better. But if you look at, again, the Kyrie and Steph matchup, I think I figured out the difference between Kyrie and Steph, y'all. Kyrie, I think I said on the last podcast that Kyrie's better than Steph Curry. The finals confirmed that for me, y'all. Kyrie is better than Stephen Curry, and it seems crazy to believe, because Stephen Curry is a two-time MVP and all that stuff, and now he's got two titles. Kyrie Irving is better at basketball than him. Kyrie Irving is he's gifted with the basketball. He is gifted in isolation. And if you want to pick apart isolation ball versus, you know, ball movement and all that stuff, I'll listen to that. But guess what? Every team plays a little bit of isolation ball. Durant even said so himself on the Bill Simmons podcast. Kyrie is just, he makes my jaw drop every time I watch him play. I've been watching basketball for a long time. He's special, and there aren't a lot of special ball players in the league. I'm going to look forward to next offseason, though, coming back in the fall when they release these rankings and they say guys like Kyle Lowry and Dame Lillard are better than him. That's going to be fun, because they do that every year. But Kyrie is special. But here's the difference. I think, even though I think Kyrie is better, and for all the reasons that I laid out on the last podcast of how Kyrie's game is better than Steph's game overall, I think Steph Curry has more of an impact on the game because of his shooting and his release, the quickness of his release, how streaky he can get, the fact that he could pull up from 30 to 35 and legitimately make it on a consistent basis. I think that makes Curry harder to defend within a team concept, within a team construct of a game. It's harder to defend Steph Curry than it is to defend Kyrie Irving. And it's magnified on this particular Warriors team because they're so good, because they're so skilled, they're so adept at moving the ball. So even though I think Kyrie is better and more talented than Curry overall, I think Steph is harder to defend within the team construct of a basketball game, and therefore he has a greater impact on the game. But yeah, man, the series is closer than people are going to remember. It was a five-game series, and they're just going to look at it as Warriors in five or whatever. But when I look at how game one and game two were blowouts in favor of Golden State, game four was a blowout in favor of Cleveland, game three Cleveland outplayed Golden State and should have won, in my opinion. And then you have game five, which was, I think, a four-point game, like maybe halfway through the fourth quarter. So the Cavs don't need to trade Kevin Love for the farm to get better. I mean, Paul George might look better on paper against the Warriors. There's no telling how that situation is going to play out. We know what we have in Kevin Love, right? We all know that we have Kevin Love. He's a guy who, as a third option, will get you 19 and 11. He'll get you some outlet passes. He'll, you know, he might not be the best defender, but he'll try, which is more than you can say for some players. And he's comfortable now in his role with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't know why you would sacrifice all that for Paul George, who might come in for just a year and then might bounce on you, and then you're left with nothing. There's no third star there anymore. So I don't know, man. I just think the Cavs were closer than people are going to remember. That Durant, when LeBron dunked on Durant in game five, and Durant clearly fouled LeBron in the head and they didn't call it, that would have been Durant's third foul. He would have gone to the bench with about 10 or 9 minutes left in the second quarter. I think after that, Golden State scored 30 points and of their next 30 points, I think Durant scored like 13 of them or something like that. I mean, he got hot after that. And Durant was so unbelievable in the entire series. It's just difficult to reconcile that with the fact that he left and the team that he went to specifically. Less the fact that he left, more the team that he went to. It's hard to reconcile those two things because he made all those shots and he appeared that he could not miss in the finals, especially from three. He was unbelievable, but I cannot give him full credit for leading a team to a championship. He was the best player on a team that won a championship, but Kevin Durant did not lead them to a championship. Kevin Durant went to a team that was already championship worthy. So there is a difference there. And the last thing I'll say about it was I think Durant knows that it wasn't as special as it could have been had he won in Oklahoma City or someplace else where he did in fact lead the team to a title. The celebration was the weirdest celebration I've ever seen. I mean, for a team that, you know, endured all those 3-1 jokes and was going up against a rival in the finals and knocked off the best player in the world and all that stuff, they didn't face any adversity this year, and you could tell in the way that they celebrated. They just didn't appear that happy. Durant didn't appear. He was happy, but he wasn't as happy as you would think for a guy who had been in the league 9 years or 10 years and had not won a title, and it was his first one. Like, I just didn't see the joy on their faces. And I'm sounding like people are thinking like, oh, man, you're just a Cavs fan, sour grapes. No, I'm dead serious. I did not see a happy team, a team that was as happy as it could be having won, because I think they know that they kind of got over on everybody on this one. Like, they kind of fudged it a little bit, right? I mean, Durant's mom has to reassure him on the court. Don't matter what nobody says, baby. You did it. Listen to what nobody has to say. Really? Like, that should not be what you're celebrating in center court right after the game ends. Like, that just felt weird to me. Maybe it's just me. David West post-game interview where he goes on this rant about the Warriors being the hardest working team in the NBA, and everybody on that team works so hard and sacrifice. That was the most phony, baloney, over-the-top wrestling interview, post-game press interview I've ever seen in my life. Like, David West was going out of his way to try to convince people that they worked harder than everybody else. And I'm not saying that those guys don't work hard, but don't sell me on this thing like you guys faced all this adversity and nobody believed in you and we're not getting our just due and all this other stuff. Like, come on, man. David West, you've been riding the gravy train for a few years now. You've been trying to get over. You tried to get over with the San Antonio Spurs last year, and you tried to get over again this year. If the Cavs would have won, I'm sure you would have opted out and joined the Cavs next year. You know what I mean? It just, we're not buying it. And then Durant on the Simmons podcast said that he didn't even go to the team celebration afterwards. He went home and hung out with his family. If that doesn't sound like a hired gun, I don't know what does. You win the championship with your brothers and you don't even celebrate with your brothers? You don't kick it with them? I mean, I don't know, man. Like I said, it doesn't diminish how great of a team they are, but it just felt weird. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Let's go ahead and bring on Mark Hicks, y'all. I done already went over on time, so let's go ahead and get this Mark Draft popping. 2017 NBA Draft. All right, y'all, joining the preseason podcast of the year on the Your Ad Here hotline, a regular here around these parts, Mr. Mark Hicks joining us for yet another Mark Draft. Mark, father of four, happy belated Father's Day. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, cousin. Happy belated Father's Day to you.
Yeah, so I'm new at it, but I'm trying to figure out where my role is. Like, do I need to, you know, do I father extra hard on that day? Do I slack off that day? Do I have to, you know, go the extra mile? Do I have to do any like chores around the crib, or is it like my birthday?
As a season vet, you do absolutely nothing, man. You just kick back, grab your favorite beverage, and just kick back and don't do anything. You are basically the laziest person in America on that day.
Well, I'm gonna shoot for that down the road once my kid's a little older and he knows what's going on, and you know he's able to do for me because I have to do everything for him right now, but.
Right.
And this may quickly turn into the baby sleeping edition of the podcast. So we'll see. We'll see where the evening takes us. Yeah, man. Mark Draft. So as we all know by now, I would imagine the Philadelphia.
If you don't know by now, you're sad.
Yeah, the Philadelphia 76ers are on the clock, so to speak. They moved up to number one in the deal with the Celtics. The Celtics had the number one pick, traded down from 1 to 3. The Sixers moved up from 3 to 1. Boston picked up an extra Lakers pick for next year, which I think is protected outside of the 2-5 range, if I'm not mistaken. And if it can go,
right.
Yeah, and then if that doesn't come through next year, then they get a Sacramento pick down the road, something like that. So there's been so much moving and shaking in the NBA. There's been so much speculation, so many rumors about everybody from LeBron James to Dwight Howard to anybody you can think of in between. I am excited because I believe that we're going to see some blockbuster moves in the next 48 hours. So let's start right at the top, man. Philadelphia's got the number one pick. For those of you who are rookies to the Mark draft, Mark tells us what all these teams should do, not who they're going to take, but who they ought to take, because all we have to go on is these bogus rumors, and the rumor mill is, worthless. So Philadelphia's on the clock, Mark. This is a team that, you know, under the Sam Hinkie regime is still collecting picks. You know, even though he's long gone, they're still raking in the assets, right? What is it that the Sixers need to do at the number one spot now? I mean, obviously they moved up, so they have a guy in mind that they want. By all accounts, that guy is Markelle Fultz, the combo guard out of Washington. Is that who they should take, though?
I believe that's who they should take. And if they were at 3, and this trade didn't happen, I was actually advocating for them to trade up to take him. So they actually did what I expected and I hoped that they would do. Because at the end of the day, their biggest need is point guard. So Markelle Fultz is the pick. And this was the person that I targeted for Philly all along. I just didn't know if they was going to actually make a bold enough move to go up to get him. Now, my question is he actually the best point guard? Because at the end of the day, yeah, he's going to score. He's going to defend. He's going to do a whole bunch of different things. But you got to look at where he played at. He played at Washington, and Washington didn't even make it, you know, to the NCAA tournament.
Washington was garbage.
And they were garbage. Exactly. And my thing is because of that, can you really, you know, if he's actually the best player in his draft, how come his team couldn't make that tournament?
How come Danny Ainge didn't want him?
Good point.
Danny Ainge looked Markelle Fultz in the face and said, "No, I don't want you."
Yeah, right. And I think the reason why is when we come up to 3, and I believe there's a reason why on that. But I think Markelle Fultz is a very talented player, and I think he will do well in Philly. And it's just a matter of can Coach Brown get the most out of him to make that team better.
So,
and that's just going to be the key. That and health, more than anything, is going to be for the Sixers as far as their future is concerned.
So, full disclosure, I'd never watched a Markelle Fultz game live. If you meet somebody who tells you that they've watched a Markelle Fultz game live, they are lying to you. They are lying to you. So do not ever believe that. Nobody saw this dude play. This dude is basically in Siberia hooping against, you know, Northern Colorado State or whoever, or University of Idaho, you know, the Vandals or whatever. Like, I don't know who he's playing against up there. And if you look at the highlights, he's got game. Like, you could tell that he's got hoop game. He's got a pro game to him. Like, his game just screams pro style. I can create my own shot in the NBA type game. He also has this kind of relaxed attitude about him. Like, he just doesn't always look like he's invested. I don't know what it is, but when you couple his kind of lax kind of approach to the fact that his team only won 9 games, it makes you question whether or not he needs to be a leader. I don't know who the leader is going to be on Philly. I think the fact that he is a combo guard probably works to his advantage on that team because, wait a minute. I'm looking at TV right now and we have breaking news on the podcast. Dwight Howard just got traded to the Hornets for Plumlee. And for one of the Plumlee brothers and Marco Bellinelli. So by the time y'all hear this, y'all will know about this already. But I'm just seeing this live right now. Howard to the Hornets in exchange for Miles Plumlee, Marco Bellinelli, and the 41st pick, as reported by The Vertical by way of Hip Hop Sports Report. So there you go.
This is exactly what you're talking about, though. Over the next 48 hours, you know, we used to talk about the silly season. There ain't going to be nothing silly about this. There's going to be some huge – I'm telling you, there's going to be some – it's going to be silly for how many different moves and blockbuster deals are going to happen over the next 48 hours, man. That's just the start of it.
Right.
For real.
Right. And so – and that brings us to our second pick, actually. But to wrap it up on Fultz real quick – Ben Simmons is supposed to be the guy who's the de facto point guard, even though he's like 6'10".
Correct.
Assuming he comes back healthy this year, he's going to be running a lot of point, and we're going to have to see if Fultz can play off the ball, which he didn't really do in Washington. He handled the ball a lot, understandably right. So I don't know. They got some coaching things. Brett Brown's got his work cut out for him as far as making all that work up in Philly. But, I mean, with Embiid, Fultz, and Simmons it's promising. I can't say that I loved any of those three players in college, but it seems like a promising core. Moving to the Lakers at the number two pick, so they've already made a trade today. They sent D'Angelo Russell and Timofey Mozgov, NBA champion Timofey Mozgov. Right. They sent them to the Brooklyn Nets in exchange for Brooke Lopez and I think the 27th pick of the draft. Now, that is... kind of a twofold deal, like the Nets, and you pointed this out in the text message conversation that we had, Mark. The Nets were low on talent, and the Lakers were high on payroll. So in order to account for both of those things, D'Angelo goes, and Brooklyn takes on the Mozgov contract as a result, and then Brook Lopez and his one-year deal goes out to L.A. He'll stick there for just a year, more than likely, and then they'll get another draft pick out of it. So... makes sense. I mean, I understand that trade, but and really what it does more than anything is it clears the way for a point guard, which is crazy because there are four point guards probably in the top six players in this draft, or probably four of them are point guards. I mean, I don't know how many more point guards we're going to get to come into this league. That I mean, this is a point guard revolution. And I think when we rate these point guards, I really think it's imperative that we do so within the context of this group of players that we have these days are coming into a situation where there's a gluttony of point guards in the league. So we have De'Aaron Fox, we have Fultz, Lonzo Ball, and Dennis Smith. These guys are all great guards, but they're coming into a league that's already dominated by guards. There's already 17 really, really good point guards in the league right now. So even if these kids all max out, I don't know where they're going to land in that, in the scheme of things. So having said all that, it looks like it's Lonzo Ball. LaVar Ball is going to get his wish. Is that the right move for the Lakers, though?
I've been back and forth with this since college basketball season ended. Lonzo Ball, for what the Lakers need, is the right fit for Lonzo, but it's a package deal. And the issue that I have is his dad. And, you know, even though LeVar, his dad plays a pivotal role. See, if it was me, if I was Magic Johnson, I sat down with Lonzo and LeVar, I'm going to say, look, all right, let me holler at you for a second, LeVar. We want to have your son on our team. But I'm going to tell you this. You will not get on one radio show. You will not get on one TV show. You will not go out and make stupid-ass comments every single chance you get. You are going to sit there. You're going to cheer this team on. You're going to be a support for your son. And that's it. And anything other than, yes, sir, Mr. Johnson, sir, I'm not taking him. I'm going to be straight up and honest. I'm not taking him because – he's such a headache, and quite honestly, the only place that you know could actually warrant that or deal with that is L.A. because L.A. is all about drama and everything else. That's a perfect L.A. type of guy, and this whole situation and drama is just perfect for that area. But I just don't want the headache, man. But from Lonzo's talent and this. And it also comes down to this. One of the sayings that I heard a long time ago is the juice worth the squeeze? Is the juice worth the squeeze with Lonzo? Is he that good of a player that you're willing to put up with his his dad and his shenanigans and all the crap that he has to give you on your roster in your locker room, putting teammates against each other, getting back and forth with the coaches. I mean, can you just imagine having that type of distraction every single day? And you know, at the end of the day, if Lonzo is talented enough, if he is a superstar, if he's worth, you know, the big ball of shoes that they're, you know, he's trying to sell, then yeah, the juice is worth the squeeze then. But if you have any doubt, if you have any inclination that this is not going to work, then you can't take this kid. But they're going to take him, and honestly, for the type of player that he is, because he's a pass-first type of guy, he's going to make it that team better than D'Angelo Russell was, because I don't think he's actually a true point guard. I think for the type of deal that they're going to make, I think he's going to be good for that team. So, I would take him at 2. But there's going to be some stipulations that have to come from Magic Johnson, like day one. Like, LeVar, you just can't do the crap that you've been doing and expect me to put up with it. It's just not going to happen.
So here's the good news. The good news is that LeVar has 3 children. His time is going to be occupied by trying to convince UCLA or, you know, that they did not make a mistake by getting Jello Ball in on the deal, who, you know, let some people tell it is the lesser of the 3 balls, or the least talented of the 3 ball players.
Correct.
And then also trying to trick us into believing that LaMelo is, in fact, a 70-point-per-game scorer, when we know, you know, we've seen the highlights, quote unquote, of him. You know, when this team lost and he had that horrible game and that thing went viral, all his turnovers and everything else. I mean,
he's a chucker anyway. So
my point is, LeVar needs to spend his time bullying those in which he can get away with bullying. He can bully those dudes at whatever Chino Hills High School, whatever that is. He can bully cats over there. He can't bully Wizard Kelly, let alone Magic Johnson. That's not going to happen. Let Lonzo do his thing. I think Lonzo is a fine player. I think he has the ugliest jumper this side of Sean Marion. But it goes in. You know, I'm not going to hate on him and say he can't shoot. The kid can shoot. And so that's my biggest concern, is does the shot go in? Some will tell you that he doesn't even have a mid-range game because of that release, but he does have a 3-point game, and his release is quick. He's got good size. He's a good athlete. Real quick, though, do you think his passing is overrated or underrated or properly rated?
Probably slightly overrated.
I would agree.
I don't think he's like drastically overrated. I just think, they make such a big deal about his passing, but, I think with the talent that the Lakers have and will have, one of the biggest things that I just wanted to point out about the Lakers and the trade that they made, it's going to drop a lot of salary, but it's also going to make them available or able to sign 2 max players in the summer of 2018.
That's the thinking.
Now, you can speculate who those 2 players will be.
Well, obviously, LeBron is going to be one of them, obviously.
Correct.
Because why would you play with Kyrie Irving when you can play with Lonzo Ball? I mean, Kyrie Irving only averaged 30 a game in the finals. You know, why would you want to play with Kyrie when you could play with Lonzo and Jordan Clarkson? You know what I'm saying?
Like, exactly. I'll be running to do that, you know, and get an occasional dunk from Larry Nance Jr.
It's better than Love and Kyrie and LeBron here. I mean, that's all I know.
Without question.
Well, let's move on to the 3rd pick. Boston Celtics are now in that slot. They're in an interesting spot too, because they are they're in the NBA's Final 4, and yet they won the lottery. And even though they traded out of the top spot, they're still in the top 3 in a draft that I, along with many others, think is deep at the top, if that makes sense. You know, from 1 to about maybe 6 or 7, I think they're pretty much all quality prospects. And from there, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But I think there is some good value at the top of the draft. And so, knowing that, Danny Ainge never pulled the trigger on any type of deal with this pick. He held on to it. So who should he take?
He should take Josh Jackson, small forward from Kansas. And And what I was talking about earlier is I believe that the reason why they dropped down from 1 to 3 is that I feel that they feel that Josh Jackson is the best player in his draft by far, which is why they looked Markelle Fultz dead in the face and said, no, you're not our guy. I believe that Josh Jackson, in their opinion, is the best player in his draft. Now, there's been speculation about whether they was going to keep that pick, whether they was going to trade it for Jimmy Butler. I still think that's a strong possibility that Jimmy Butler at some point will, over the next 48 hours, will be a Celtic. I actually think he's a better fit for the Celtics than the Cavs. That's just my personal opinion. But for all intents and purposes, I'm looking at Boston and getting Josh Jackson, clearly the best player, in my opinion, one of, if not the best players in this draft. I think that's an upgrade for them. A young guy, and then also it qualifies, you know, that you will have to pay some money to Isaiah Thomas, because you just don't give 20, you know, almost 30 points per game up, you know, and then get a Markelle Fultz or somebody else, a young point guard, to take over. I mean, where's scoring going to come from? You have to, I mean, the way it's set up for Isaiah Thomas to succeed. Brad Stevens and their system is set up for him to succeed. So, you know, a 5'8" point guard is not going to win you an NBA title, but he's not going to be a 5'8" point guard plus other great players around him. Yeah, you have a good chance of winning a title, but, you know, it starts there. And you got to start getting some premier ball players with some of the assets that Danny Ainge has built up over the last few years. And this is a very good chance to him to get a very good NBA player. Okay, Josh Jackson is the pick.
Let me ask you this then. Who, in your opinion, regardless of fit, is the best player in the draft?
Josh Jackson, because I've seen him a lot.
Unlike Markelle Fultz, the mystery
man. Unlike Markelle Fultz. Yeah, I mean, because I don't go by what I see. And from what I saw, Josh Jackson is, in my opinion, the best player in his draft.
Yeah, so I would actually agree with that assessment. I think we've been watching basketball together too long, man. Josh Jackson, we agree on a lot of stuff. Josh Jackson was my favorite player in college throughout the course of the season that I observed. I thought he was destroying the tournament until that one game he got in foul trouble and Kansas couldn't overcome that. But right. But he's the player that sticks out to me the most. Now, I will say that, I mean, when you watch his tape on YouTube, because that's pretty much where we all say we watch the tape. Yeah, we all have YouTube. When we watch the tape on YouTube, right, this is what I saw from Jackson. I saw a lot of dunks. He caught a lot of lobs.
Yes.
What I didn't know about him, though, was that his jumper is pretty suspect. In fact, he was actually a poor free throw shooter at Kansas.
So, yes, he was.
And to take it a step further, it makes you wonder how he would fit in with Boston, who has a philosophy of taking a bunch of threes, even though they're not that good at shooting team. So that was their biggest thing that kind of did them in against the Cavs. The Cavs were leaving guys open, and they couldn't make the shots because Boston's not that good of a shooting team. But they take like the third most threes in the league or the fourth most threes in the league. So they were really high in three-point attempts. And so now you're bringing in a wing player that's going to take theoretically more three-point attempts, but he can't shoot right now. So it's kind of a weird dynamic there with the fit. And, you know, if he's not catching lobs, it's kind of like, what do we have here? I have to wonder that a little bit.
I think his tenacity, though, I think he has the mindset that I think he understands and he's mature enough to know that those are, in fact, his weaknesses or areas that he needs to improve on. And I think he has the drive that he's going to fix those things. You know, all of these players that's coming into this draft have you know, significant flaws, whether they're drastic like free throw shooting, which to me, I can't understand. If you're a professional basketball player, how in the hell you can't shoot free throws is beyond me.
DeAndre Jordan, somebody either with a gigantic hand. You know, I mean, he's a 6'8" guy. You know, he should fit in from an athletic standpoint, and the Celtics could use another athlete that actually has some talent.
Right.
But I mean, it's just kind of weird. It's kind of a weird fit. But I would agree that he's kind of the top talent in the draft, or very near the top, anyways. But I mean, like I said, again, I don't think it's that he's much better than anybody else. I think I liked him a lot during the tournament and during the season. I like him less now compared to the rest of the field than I did a couple of months ago, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you on that.
So Phoenix has the fourth pick. I know they were dying to get into the top three. I think they, by all accounts, they really had their heart set on Lonzo Ball, which I think with Devin Booker would make the greatest light-skinned backcourt since Curry and Thompson. that would be something to behold to see those four guys go head-to-head. But right. If that doesn't happen, what does Phoenix do then with the fourth pick?
If they stay at four, their biggest need, in my opinion, because quietly they've developed a nice roster. They just don't know how to win, and their roster is extremely young. But for me, at four, I'm taking Jason Tatum, small forward from Duke. Because right now, if I'm looking at each and every individual position that they have, I like Bledsoe, I like Devin Booker, I like Marquise Chris. I even like all the centers that they have on their roster. But their most glaring weakness or glaring need to me is small forward. And T.J. Warren is not the answer at small forward if I'm the Suns. So Jason Tatum, I think he can quietly become the best player in his draft, believe it or not. It depends on where he goes. But he has a lot of tools that, you know, he was somewhat handcuffed at Duke with Grayson Allen and Luke Kennard and all these other guys that was on the team. You know, he got overshadowed a little bit. But I think Jason Tatum has enough talent, man. He could, if he goes to Phoenix and he gets into a situation where he plays a lot, he could very well be the best player to come out in this draft. I mean, I would not be surprised if he won Rookie of the Year, depending on if he goes to a decent team where he can showcase some of those skills.
I was watching Tatum. I was watching the tape on Jason Tatum, and so I'm looking at the tape. I'm like, okay, I see a little offensive game there. And then I was trying to figure out who he reminded me of. And he reminded me of a slow Carmelo Anthony. I started calling him Slow Mello in my head.
Slow Mello?
I mean, like, because Mello's got that quick, he's got a quick first step. He's got a quick release, a really quick release. He's got a quick spin move. Like, Carmelo just is so polished offensively. This dude,
yes,
he was getting to his spots and he was doing what he needed to do, but he did not, it looked like it was in slow motion. So.
Right, I don't know. It was actually in fast motion.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he looked slow in college, he's going to be, like, having, like, molasses in his Nike Airs in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not going to be a good look because those guys are just, they're just faster in the NBA, obviously. But I do, but the more I watched of him, the more I liked him. And I think he can come right in and contribute right away. I'm like you where I could foresee a scenario in which he wound up being the best player in the draft. I would not be surprised by that. And I like him, and I think he's a good player. I think you could argue that he's better than Josh Jackson in that he's got that more refined offensive game than Jackson, I think, at this stage.
I would agree, and I think he's bigger. He's bigger physically, I think, than
Josh Jackson. Yeah, he's got the frame that's going to fill out, man. He's not too dissimilar from Jabari Parker, who just came out of Duke a couple of years ago. I agree with that. He's like a slightly less talented Jabari Parker, maybe. Something like that. That's kind of how I see him, but I like him.
Right, though. I agree.
Sacramento's at five. So Vlade Divac is still running the show there. So what should Vlade Divac do with that pick?
Vlade needs to go ahead and get a point guard because they don't have one.
They got Darren Collison. You mean he's not the answer?
Yeah, like I said, they don't have one.
Oh, they had Isaiah Thomas, so he's not the answer?
Yeah, but he's not the answer. He's not good enough.
Okay, well, what about who else have they done had to come through there? I'm trying to think of all the point guards they done had since Bibby. They probably had more than anybody in the league.
Right, but none of them were any good, so they need to start over. So, my opinion, let's start with a good one. Let's start with De'Aaron Fox. Put him at point guard because life without Boogie is going to be tough for this team. And we always seem to talk about Sacramento every single year.
They pick fifth every year.
About the fact that they need talent. And it seems like they're always in the top five to six every single year, and they are one of the least talented teams in the league. I just don't understand that.
Well, you pick fifth every year. They never bottom out, and I guess that's – I mean, people want to say what's the, you know, people want to trash the lottery process, but that's the beauty of the lottery is that you can't bottom out and guarantee yourself a top pick. I mean, one right. of these years they should have landed on John Wall. They should have landed on Blake Griffin. They should have landed on Andrew Wiggins. They should have landed on Towns or one of these other right. dudes at the top of the draft. They keep landing fifth every year, and they keep getting fifth. They keep getting somebody who's like the fifth best guy
right.
at best, and it doesn't work out. So, but Fox, though, so he's most famous for now is what he did in the tournament. And I know that some people can overrate what happens in the tournament. That's something that people get caught up in. I think we all tend right. to get caught up a little bit about what we see in the tournament. I don't think that's too abnormal, but I do think that
but you can't discredit it either, because on the biggest stage you got to give a guy props for showing up.
Yeah,
how many times have we seen, you know, talented players, the guys that we think are the best players in college basketball, not show up in the biggest game? So
he showed up and showed out against Lonzo Ball. And yes, he put about 38 on him or something like that that night.
And put the clamps on him, too. Yeah, he was.
And Lonzo kind of had that Markelle Fultz deer in the headlights look on his face, just kind of going through the motions. And meanwhile, right. De'Aaron Fox is out here looking like, you know, freaking World Be Free or somebody. You know, he was just just doing whatever he wanted to do.
And so I think
Fox is quick. He's rangy. I like his length and his size.
Yep.
He's a competitor, man. Like, he won so many people over, not only with the way that he outplayed Lonzo thoroughly in that tournament game, but then when they lost to Carolina at the buzzer the next game, he was in tears after the game talking about his brothers and his teammates and how much he loved them and all that stuff. That only endears people to him more. Whereas after Lonzo lost, Lonzo, like 15 minutes later, is like, yeah, I'm going to the NBA.
I'm going to the NBA draft.
And it's like, hold on, man.
Like, you just barely got the sweat off your
back. Yeah, so you're still sweating, bro. Like, you don't have to declare for the draft immediately. Like, what kind of PR plan was that? Thank you, LeVar.
He got LeVar as his publicist. That's why.
So, but Fox, you know, I mean, so now we're looking at a Fox and Buddy Hield backcourt, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
And with what was the other kid from Kentucky?
Willie Cauley-Stein
is still there, and they got
Scal there.
Okay, so they're just gonna get all the Kentucky Wildcats because they
yes,
got a,
exactly.
they got a shot at Malik Monk at 10. I mean, it's possible. They just get a whole reunion popping. Orlando's at 6, man. They have a new general manager. That's not surprising to anybody. But
nope.
And I don't even know the dude's name. I'm not even gonna front.
It's not
the dude
actually.
From Milwaukee. He didn't go down there, did he? I'll check on it. And while I check on it, you can tell us what this mystery guy should do.
Well, the mystery guy should select Malik Monk and help add them to...
It is John Hammond. John Hammond from Milwaukee.
John Hammond, thank you. Yep. And, you know, their glaring need is small forward, but they can go in a whole bunch of different directions. And, once they got rid of, you know, of Victor Oladipo, you know, they have a little bit of a hole at, you know, whatever wing player they decide that they want to go. But I think Malik Monk will actually be the guy for them. And you put him and I criticize Elfrid Payton when they drafted him, but he's not a terrible point guard. He really isn't.
But he is a terrible point guard because, like we said, this is the era of point guards. Every team has an elite point guard, so. You know, if to be a not terrible point guard in 2017 means you're a terrible point guard. You know
terrible
what I'm saying? like there's just so many good guards. There's so much point guard depth. Like, look at Mike Conley. Like, Mike Conley is a very, very good point guard, and he's probably like the 10th best point guard in the league at best. Like, I mean, there's not a lot of. It's just tough at that position.
Yeah.
So I don't. I mean, I'm not big on Elfrid Payton. I mean, they traded for him, I think, on draft night with Philly or something like that.
Yes. They did.
I think Orlando, as much as any team, is confused about the direction of the franchise. They just don't know which way they want to go, and so they need.
Which
to,
is why
I mean,
they try to get Griff.
I mean, right, and they just drafted a wing dude last year with Hazonia in the top five. So,
right.
But Malik Monk is a shooter. I think he's kind of on the smaller side, but he can fill it up. And I mean, I like him though. And they need some shooting down there in the worst way.
Without question.
Minnesota's at 7. The late Flip Saunders used to run the show there. He does not anymore. But they still have a great foundation there with Tibbs at the coach and obviously Towns and Wiggins. Zach LaVine's coming off an injury. Ricky Rubio's in a bunch of trade rumors, and they're being rumored to have interest in Jimmy Butler. So what do you think Minnesota should do? Maybe Minnesota ought to trade this pick. I don't know.
That's exactly what they should do. They should trade a pick. For all intents and purposes, they have an extremely young roster, and the biggest problem with Minnesota is it hasn't been health like it is in Philly. It's been the fact that these kids just don't know how to win, and they need veterans. They need veteran leadership more than anything else, but they can't just keep getting young guys. And I understand, you know, when you're at the seventh pick in the draft, you want to get hopefully another blue chip guy or a guy that's instrumental. Whether they're starting or coming off the bench, honestly, they need to trade the pick. If I was them, if I was Tibbs, I'd be looking to try to trade this pick, like Ed, or maybe a Jimmy Butler or something like that. But if not, if they happen to stay at seven and they make the pick, probably the most versatile front court player that they have in this draft is Jonathan Isaac from Florida State, because the kid's 6'11", he's like 6'10", 6'11". But he's small enough. I think he can play small forward. He can play power forward. He has, a frame where he can fill out just a little bit. I mean, he'll never be a big guy per se. But they need that versatility on the front court. And
they got
versatility
with Karl Towns.
Right.
I mean, they don't get much more versatile than that.
Right. Yeah, he's going to need help too. I mean, from a shot blocking standpoint, a guy who can shoot from the outside. He needs that type of help out there, in addition to, you know, the other talent that they have on the team. From a wing player, skill position type, point guard, they're pretty loaded in that sense. But they need more versatility on the front court, you know, in addition to Towns. I think that's the way that they need to go. If they keep the pick. Personally, I don't think they should keep it. I think they need to trade that pick.
I feel like,
and give it to somebody else.
So I feel like Chris Dunn had a down year as a rookie. He had like a lot of high expectations. I don't feel like he did much of or had much of an impact. But here's the thing. Why don't you just take that pick, take the seventh pick? Why don't you take the seventh pick and package that with Zach LaVine and trade it for Jimmy Butler and then let him get reunited with Tibbs? And now you got Wiggins, Butler, Chris Dunn, Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, I don't know. That sounds like a good move to me. I mean, I would not be mad at a core of Wiggins, Jimmy Buckets, and Cat Daddy. I think that's a nice little core there.
That's a very good core.
So everybody's favorite circus, not the Cavs, but the New York Knicks. The Knicks, never afraid to make fools of themselves. Now they're talking about trading Porzingis. So you're Phil Jackson. You're sitting on top of 11 championship rings, none of them as an executive. So if you're Phil, you're probably going to trade this pick for some Magic Beans. But if you're not Phil and you're Mark, but you still run the Knicks, what are you doing?
For me, I realized last year that Derrick Rose is done. We all knew that before when the Knicks grabbed him and made this big deal that they had him on the team, but he's done. So they need a point guard. Their best bet for right now would be Dennis Smith, the point guard from NC State. And I think he showed up very well in big games. I think he will be a catalyst that he will help get Porzingis into the flow of the offense a lot easier, help him get some easier shots. And that's the responsibility of the point guard, the guy who handles the ball a lot. He's supposed to help facilitate the offense and get other guys shots and get guys easy shots. One of the biggest problems with the Knicks is that, you know, they were chucking up shots and there was really no flow to their offense whatsoever. I think Dennis Smith will be the perfect guy to start this off.
I think I could see the Knicks fans loving Dennis Smith. They loved Jerry and Grant when he was there.
Exactly.
If you love Jerry and Grant, then you're going to be head over heels for Dennis Smith. I was watching his tape. I love saying tape. I was looking at his tape. I was looking at his tape, and Dennis Smith, I was like, okay, he reminds me of like a little bit of Baron Davis. You know, I see a little bit of Baron in his game. And then I looked him up online. I saw the player comparison and it said Baron Davis. And I'm like, there it is. If he's anything like B. Diddy, the Knicks fans will pledge their undying love for him. as they do right. with everybody, all their guys. But I just don't know what direction they're going in. Phil doesn't know. He's the senility done kicked in. He doesn't know what direction they're going to.
Now they have no clue where they're going.
But hey, Dennis Smith's a good player though. So if they wind up with him, I think they if I were a Knicks fan, shout out to Anthony. If they round up with Dennis Smith, I would be happy about that. Dallas at 9.
I would be happy too.
Yeah, what about the Mavs at 9?
Mavs at 9. They also need a point guard as well. And I, quite honestly, I have not seen anything except from tape, quote unquote. So Frank Ntilikina from France is 6'5" point guard. At this point, they need playmakers in the worst way. Either, you know, with at the point guard, the shoe guard, whatever. I don't care. This case, they need a point guard. So that's where I would start. I think he offers defensive versatility, and you put him, you know, Wes Matthews, Harrison Barnes, all the guys that they have, Nerlens Noel for, you know, forever, well, whatever amount of time they have him. I mean, that will help them in their transition. So they need a point guard in all this. So let's start with Frank, and he's only 18 years old. So it's like you got a long time to groom him, and the Mavs ain't winning anything anytime soon. And so I wouldn't be trying to brush him. So at this point, that's where they need to go.
It's funny, man, is that I you know, I heard his name. I heard he's from France. I clicked on his picture. I'm expecting to see a white dude. He's not white.
No.
he's not white. He is a 6'5 point guard, though. Apparently, he's from Belgium originally, but I Correct. Guess he's got French nationality. Yeah, man, I mean, every team needs a point guard. So if this dude is going to be the heir apparent to Dirk in that, they're bringing in another international guy to take the torch from Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, he's the top international prospect, so why not, right?
Right.
I don't know. I think Dallas, they made a good move picking up Nerlens Noel last year. You know, Seth Curry's there. He actually came on late in the year. He's halfway decent. I actually like his game a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think they got some – there's some signs there, but they need to figure out a succession plan for Dirk one way or another because this might be Dirk's last hurrah. The Sacramento Kings are again on the clock at 10.
So if I'm looking at – if I'm Sacramento, you know, I got my point guard early on. So I still – my son loves Willie Cauley-Stein. He loves him, okay? And he thinks he's underrated. I still think that they need a center.
And, but they got Scal. Isn't Scal playing
center? I still think they need a center. They need another front court guy. I need a guy – And you could have the three-headed monster, you know, three-headed rotation with between him, Willie, and Scal. But this guy here is the guy that I'm looking at. I'm looking at Zach Collins from Gonzaga. We'll put him at this as a 7-foot center. I think he has a bunch of skill. He can work him inside, outside. Most importantly, he's got a perimeter game which can stretch the floor to, you know, to free up some lanes and things like that. So I think with him and the other, you know, two-headed monster, I think the three of them, I think, will do well in Sacramento. I mean, at least that's a good start to try to, you know, to change their philosophy and actually start winning some basketball games.
Did he come off the bench for them? For Gonzaga? I feel like he might have come off the bench for them. I don't know. Somebody decent, I think, came off the bench for them and then turned out that he was, like, one of their best players. I don't know. Sacramento, if things fall right, they could get two good players, but they have to really fall the right way, I feel like, for them.
Right. I mean, I think, honestly, if one of the small forwards actually fell to them, they will probably take that because, you know, Rudy Gay is gone and he can walk out into the, you know, the sunset and destroy some other team. But – I mean, honestly, if one of those guys fell, that wouldn't be such a bad idea. But I think just because of the nature of the beast and what's left, I just don't think that they can afford to really go any other route but probably a big guy at number 10.
What about at 11? The Charlotte Hornets don't need a big guy anymore because they just acquired Dwight Howard. So
exactly. So now they got that was one of their needs as far as I was concerned. So that's good.
Yeah, well, they got Dwight to go with Kemba, Frank the Tank, Nick Batum.
Nicholas Batum.
So yeah, what are they doing at 11 then?
I'm going Luke Kennard. They need to spread the floor. They need shooters. I mean, they got, you know, besides Batum, I don't really trust anybody else shooting the ball on that team. So
I trust Kemba.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's hit or miss from, I mean, he's better. He's better than advertised. He's better than I ever thought he would be as a shooter. He's more of a scorer to me. Mm-hmm. So for me, they need shooters. They need knockdown shooters. And I think Luke Kennard will actually do well. He'll get a lot of open looks. He's going to have a chance that he start knocking those things down. He's going to make himself a lot of money in this league. So Luke Kennard will be the pick for me.
What about Detroit at number 12?
For Detroit, regardless of whether they keep Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or not, I think they still need to get another wing, and in particular another shooting guard. So for me, a combo guard, it would actually help them. Donovan Mitchell, the combo guard from Louisville, would be my pick, because he's not only is he one of the best athletes in this draft, he's not a great shooter by any stretch of the imagination, but his defensive and athleticism is just what Stan Van Gundy needs.
Well, the Pistons will rue the day that they ever gave Reggie Jackson $80 million, I can tell you that
much. Without question.
And now they're trying to figure out what to do with him. If they can trick a team into taking him off their hands. There's rumors that they're trying to get rid of Andre Drummond now. I don't know what direction they're going in either. And I think they don't know either. I think they were low key kind of hurt that they didn't make the playoffs this year after they made it 2 years ago. So
exactly.
Denver picks 13th in the lottery, and they have a lot of assets too. They're again that team that has all these guys that are like pretty good, but nobody that's great. So how do they get great, Mark?
Well, I wish I knew the answer to that question. I know one thing. I know whoever they end up picking is probably going to be a good player but not a great player. And I think the person who's going to be a good player but not a great player for Denver will be Justin Jackson from the North Carolina Tar Heel.
Really?
Another guy, another face who's going to be decent. But I don't think he's going to be a superstar under any circumstances, but I think he feels a need for them. And at this point, I mean, they were 40-42 last year. They pretty much are in purgatory, NBA purgatory. They don't suck enough to really get any great players, but they're not good enough to really make the playoffs on a consistent basis. And I think he's Justin Jackson. I've never been a huge fan of his. I don't know why. It's just something about his game I just do not like. But I think for them, I think he has enough tools that he could actually be a good pro player. I just don't think he's ever going to be a great pro player.
There's nothing about Justin Jackson that I really like outside of his first name. I just don't think he's that good. I think he is a decent college player after sitting there for like 3 years or whatever it was. I don't see anything. I think at best he's a bench player in the NBA. And if I'm Denver, I would much rather take a swing on like an international guy or, you know, some freshman or something like that than go that route. But and then finally, the Miami Heat, Pat Riley picking 14th, dead last in the lottery. They finished the year on fire, the Heat did. What can they do to help maybe get into the playoffs next year?
Well, the first thing they will need to do is bring back Deion Waiters. I can't believe I'm saying this, but they need to bring back Deion Waiters, because he had a marvelous second half of the year and finally found a team that actually likes him and actually wants him there. If they bring him back, I think that's a good start. They have some decent players, you know, Hassan Whiteside, who I'm a big fan of, although he drives me nuts because sometimes I think he's lazy. So for me, Lauri Markkanen from Arizona, the 7-footer, I think he can play the power forward position because he can stretch the floor. And I think for him, I mean, he will add another dimension to Eric Spoelstra and from an offensive standpoint. And there's a possibility that maybe even TJ Leaf from UCLA would be a possibility. But those type of guys who can stretch the floor, I think that's what Miami needs. They haven't really had that since Chris Bosh actually developed a jumper, a three-point shot. And they really haven't had that type of threat since from a power forward position.
To recap really quick, because we're almost out of time, Markelle Fultz 1 to Philly, Lonzo to the Lakers at 2, Josh Jackson 3 to Boston, Jason Tatum 4 to Phoenix. I think Tatum is in play at 3 to Boston, by the way. De'Aaron Fox 5 to Sacramento, Malik Monk 6 to Orlando, Jonathan Isaac 7 to Minnesota, Dennis Smith 8 to New York, Frank Talinka, I think it is, 9 to Dallas. Zach Collins to Sacramento at 10. Luke Kennard to the Hornets. Donovan Mitchell to the Pistons at 12. Justin Jackson, 13 to Denver. And Lauri Markkanen, 14 to the Miami Heat. Mark, thank you for joining us once again for yet another successful Mark draft. We would be hopeless without you in the NBA draft. Prepare to see some fireworks on Thursday, my friend.
Yes, sir. Definitely like the 4th of July.
Like the 4th of freaking July. Thanks, y'all, for listening. We out of here, y'all. Rest in peace. Prodigy, man. We love you. We out of here. One.